compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
How sweet it is to be with you. It's not Monday morning, Tuesday morning. I hope you had a great holiday weekend. Cyrus, did you have a great holiday weekend?
Oh, man. This was the best holiday I've had in well over a year. Last year everything was canceled. Like it's almost like there were no real holidays last year. Everything was different. Yeah. So Memorial Day, my son turned 15 on Memorial Day, and we had our backyard was full of family, just like old times, playing yard games, barbecuing. It was a absolutely spectacular weekend. How was yours?
Well, before we get to that, mine was fine, thank you. I'll tell you about that. Were there any cicada dishes served at the Simcoe household?
Barbecued cicada. Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah.
Crunchy. No. No, of course not. We had burgers.
Because you already said you're not going to do that.
Burgers, brats, and hot dogs. It was a meat fest.
That's what we had. We had the same thing. We had burgers, brats, and hot dogs cooked over the grill in the backyard, probably like most people who are listening right now. So it was great. We had wonderful weather, just picture-perfect weather. That doesn't always happen,
I mean, how nice is it to have the family back together?
It's great.
It's great. It's really, really great. It's a good feeling. It's so nice seeing the little nieces and nephews running around and the dog running around. It was like the American dream over the weekend.
Were you like the old man in his lawn chair just sitting there smiling at all the young people running around?
I was the grill master, so I got to hang out in at the grill most of the evening, and it was perfect, man. I wouldn't change a thing.
That's good. Yeah. Well, I'm happy to hear that. It sounds as though it was a wonderful day for so many people, and we too here at Rancho Madrid, we had a good holiday, so I'm thankful for that, and thankful for all, of course, the celebration of those who served in our military and didn't come home, those who fell in this defense of our country. Yeah, it was a poignant time to think about that, but also at the same time joyful. So I'm glad that it worked out well for you, Cyrus. Yeah. It worked out really well, and you know this story because we talked about it earlier, but man, talk about being reunited with your family. We thought COVID was bad. Imagine this man who spent 32 years, just shy of 32 years in a Michigan prison on a wrongful murder conviction. His name is Gilbert Lee Poole Jr., 56 years old. He walked out of a prison in Jackson, Michigan, just this past week after an Oakland County judge vacated his 1989 murder conviction based on DNA evidence. And that DNA evidence proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that he could not have been guilty of the crime that he was convicted for. In this case, it was a fatal stabbing. And thanks to the people at the Innocence Project at Western Michigan's University's Cooley Law School, they were the ones who did so much of the work on his behalf. Can you imagine Cyrus being with... First of all, it's great to be reunited with your family. Yeah. But imagine if you hadn't seen your family, at least not at a backyard barbecue, for 32 years. And suddenly now.
I can't even imagine it.
No. I can't either.
Wow. So he was wrongfully accused of murder?
Yeah, wrongfully accused of murder. Here's what he told the judge at the hearing where he was set free. He says, I have to say that I didn't understand what was happening back in 1988 when I came to court to be tried for a murder that I didn't commit. At 22 years old and 1,000 miles away from anyone I knew, I kicked and screamed and stomped my feet and said, this is not right. Poole was sentenced to life in prison for the June 1988 fatal stabbing of Robert Mejia, whose body was found near a running path in Pontiac. No suspects were identified until months later when Poole's then-girlfriend implicated him in the murder and later became the key witness for prosecutors. A dentist then linked Poole during the trial to a bite mark found on Mejia's body, a type of evidence that has been since widely debunked by scientific and legal organizations, according to Poole's attorney. Mr. Poole, attorney Marla Mitchell Ciccone, I'm not sure how she pronounces it, at the Innocence Project at WMU, said Mr. Poole's conviction was based on unreliable evidence according to a bite mark comparison, which is not based on science. She said, I recommend Nessel and her establishment of a conviction integrity unit that will investigate claims of innocence and uncover the truth. Several blood stains from the crime scene, as well as one found on a stone embedded in Mejia's body, did not match either the victim or the pool. But the evidence was never presented at trial by his legal counsel. The DNA found on Mejia's body implicates an unknown person. Poole, who was living in Pontiac at the time but is originally from North Carolina, thanked his supporters in court while telling Oakland County Circuit Judge Ray Lee Chabot he spent his time behind bars studying law, but he was finding no way out of his nightmare. Man, talk about a nightmare. You know, you're there and you know you didn't commit this crime. Nobody will believe you. So here's what he said. This is the conclusion of the story. I like good news, and this is great good news. He says, it wasn't until I surrendered to a higher power and God stepped in and sent me a band of angels to look past the rules and regulations and looked to see who was standing in the furnace. He's referring there to the three young men in the fiery furnace from the Bible. I was standing in the furnace. I didn't belong there. I have to thank each and every one of you. Without you, this wasn't possible. Well, congratulations, Mr. Poole. It's 33 years, way too late, but at least justice was served. And Cyrus, you know, for me, the biggest part of the story, other than his freedom, which is long overdue, is the power of this kind of scientific investigation using DNA. We can now know things about crimes that maybe 30 years ago we couldn't know.
So long ago. Yeah, these aren't things from, you know, a month or two. 30 years.
I know. And when you think about it, I mean, I would think that that would make any criminal who in any way has some DNA floating around out there at a crime scene, or maybe it's a cold case now and it's just all locked up in the police room where they keep those things. Maybe not so cold. And somebody at some point will say, well, let's go back and relook at that, you know, that cigarette butt that we found. And maybe there's some saliva on that. And maybe with the use of these new tools now, they'll be able to crack some of these cold cases. I hope.
I also hope. And this is another good reason why I'm against the death penalty. Because this guy could have easily have gotten the death penalty.
He could have, yeah.
I mean, life imprisonment's bad enough. But that the chance that even one person is put to death wrongly is enough for me to not be a fan of that.
For me, I mean, I certainly recognize that. I don't disagree with you. I'm with you on that. But for me, an even more hot button for me is the mercy issue. And just knowing that if I were in his situation, even if I were guilty of the crime, I would want mercy.
Yeah.
And of course, Jesus said, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So for me, it's a very simple straight line from one to the other. I used to be very much pro capital punishment, and I never really warmed up to some of the ideas or some of the reasons that were given for why we shouldn't embrace capital punishment. But it wasn't until I really thought it through on the mercy aspect that it really began to change my heart and my mind. Well, let's see. I've got some more good news, plenty of good news to start the week with. This is great, and it's got some people wailing and gnashing their teeth. An official at a Kenyan atheist society has resigned. Can you guess why he resigned, Cyrus? He's involved with the Atheists in Kenya Society, and he decided to resign from his post. He's the secretary of the organization, or he was until recently. You want to take a guess why he resigned?
I have a guess, and if it's got to be a real good reason. I mean, hopefully it's not just like he found a better job, you know, something anticlimactic. I'm hoping he is no longer an atheist.
You bingo, jackpot.
All right.
You hit it. His name is Mr. Seth Mahiga. He resigned from his post as the Secretary of Atheists in Kenya Society because he has found Jesus Christ and is no longer interested in promoting atheism in Kenya.
Good for him.
You know what? I'm just no longer interested in this project anymore. I've moved on.
That's awesome.
Here's what he says. Let's see. I want to get to what they're saying about him first. This evening, this is a spokesman from the group. This evening, regretfully, our secretary, Mr. Seth Mahiga, made the decision to resign from his position as secretary of our society. Seth's reasons for resigning is that he has found Jesus Christ and is no longer interested in promoting atheism in Kenya. We wish Seth all the best in his newfound relationship with Jesus Christ. I kind of get a sense of some condescension.
Oh, big time. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he read that in quite the voice that they were intending.
Maybe not, but at least they were polite in print.
That's true.
So that was a statement to the press from the president of the Atheist Society. He says, we thank him for having served the society with dedication over the last 1.5 years. The press release also advertises the resulting vacancy in the organization, inviting prospective candidates to apply for the job. So, hey, atheists, if you don't mind the commute, or if you're willing to relocate, there's a job available. So that part of the squib in their advertisement was, we are calling upon Kenyan atheists who would wish to join our executive committee to send their CV. And there's a link there for anybody who wants to send it. It's a sad day for the atheists in Kenya society, Harrison Mumia said in a separate tweet. Our secretary, Seth Mahiga, has resigned, saying he's found Jesus, LOL. The appended LOL at the end of the tweet drew the attention of Kenya's former Chief Justice, Dr. Willie M. Mutunga, who sent out the following message to his 1 million followers on Twitter. He says, Mr. President, if it is of any consolation besides your LOL, Article 32.1 of our Constitution provides every person has the right to freedom of conscience, religion, thought, belief, and opinion. This provision is not a laughing matter.
Could have fooled me.
Yeah, I mean, we're not complying with that, are we? I'm laughing for the other reason, because it's just funny and ironic.
Oh, that's great. So, I mean, this is what a great example. This guy surrounded himself with fellow atheists, right? Yeah. So it's his day in and day out job, and yet somehow the truth got through, and he's free. Good for him.
And that's the backstory, Cyrus, that I wish I knew. I don't have that information, but I wish I knew, you know, how did he... Was it a Christian friend? Was it, did Jesus come to him in a dream? We hear about that happening from, I mean, look at St. Paul. I mean, he was intent upon murdering more Christians. And although he didn't have a dream, he was knocked to the ground by a vision of Jesus. So God can use whatever means he wants to. But I would be fascinated to know, what was it that brought him around? And maybe if he had been raised Christian, maybe he was raised a Catholic. I wonder if maybe that had some tug on him.
He'd make a great guest on Morning Air. I want to hear that story.
Oh, speaking of which, thank you for reminding me, Cyrus. I want to welcome our own John Morales to the captain's chair for Morning Air. He is replacing the inimitable John Harper, for whom we have so much respect and admiration. John Morales is the new host of Morning Air. You'll hear him every morning on the 3 hours just before this one, before this show. So if you want your morning coffee a little bit earlier, you can do so with John Morales on Morning Air. Welcome, John. More good news, Cyrus. I want to keep an eye on the time. Yeah, we've got time. And we have phone calls, so I want to get to those. This is another one of these stories I just delight in sharing with people. When a Gloucester County Sheriff's deputy saw a vehicle spun off the road, he immediately sprang into action by summoning all his strength to lift a car off of a woman whose head was trapped beneath this flipped over car. It was beneath the sunroof, and she was able to crawl free and live. Holt was assisting Virginia State Police with a suspected DUI accident on May 7th. He was en route to a hospital when he witnessed the car spin. He says, I was on the scene. I observed the vehicle upside down with one of the juvenile occupants inside. In body cam footage, this is kind of like the DNA of police work, right, where you've got evidence in the form of body cam footage. So Holt is seen running to the car following the Ute's cry that his mother was trapped inside. First freeing another smaller child from inside the car, Holt heeded his screams. He said she can't breathe, and at that point her head was pinned underneath the vehicle. Can you imagine, Cyrus, the weight of an entire car resting on your head?
No, not living through it.
No, I mean... The last thing that would go through your mind is, this is too heavy, and then you're in heaven. Then you go to your judgment. So he frees the first kid, and he sees, okay, I see what's going on. So he wedges his shoulder, and this is based on the body camera information and also the audio recording. He wedged his shoulder into the door frame of the upturned car, and he braced himself. And this is him speaking. He says, I said, all you have to do is just stand up. That's all I was telling myself, just stand up. And it worked. He managed to create enough clearance for the woman to free herself and start breathing again. She was taken to the hospital for medical assessment. On May 18th, Gloucester County Sheriff's Office released the body cam evidence of Holt's tremendous act on Facebook, where people began hailing him as a hero. through sheer will and determination due to fearing the female may succumb to her circumstances in front of her panic-stricken child. Deputy Jay Holt took quick action, was able to physically lift the vehicle up in order for her to get to safety.
Wow. Is this either this guy looks like, you know, the 1980s Arnold Schwarzenegger?
He doesn't.
No?
He looks like a normal guy. I mean, I think cops tend to be maybe a little more on the burly side, but he doesn't even look burly. He just looks like an average guy who probably had a massive adrenaline rush, and he just did what he had to do.
I've heard of moms being able to do crazy stuff like that when their kids are in danger, but that's a really cool story.
Yes, and you know what? Not to in any way diminish this story, because this story is fantastic, but I've seen some where like a car is on fire and there are people inside the car. What a horrible thought. And people risk their lives. They go up to and into the car when necessary to get these people out and drag them away from a burning vehicle. I mean, it's kind of like going into a burning house and rescuing people when you yourself could die. It's just
they're called firefighters, Patrick.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the right situation, you or I or anyone could find yourself in that situation where you have to act and maybe lay down your own life. And Jesus said, a greater love has no man than to lay down his life for his friends. So I love stories like this.
Yeah,
I really
too.
Do.
That's beautiful.
Why don't we tell you what one more quick detail here, and then we're going to take a break. Then we're going to go straight to phones. So my gratitude to all of you who are holding on the lines. The number is 888-914-9149. I'm coming to your phone calls here in just a moment. Cyrus, you remember the story we talked about last week, the tragedy of that six-year-old child, Aiden Laos, who was in his car seat, in the back seat of his car, and some crazy guy, and I think a woman was with him, was engaged in a road rage incident against little Aiden's mom. This is in Orange, on the 55 freeway in Orange, which is in Southern California. So it resulted in the people, one of whom shot at Aiden's mom. Well, the bullet entered the back of her car through the trunk, and it wounded him fatally. And he was saying, "Mommy, my tummy hurts," as she was taking him out of the car seat, and he died. So we covered that tragedy last week, and I just want to give you an update here. The reward to find the killer of six-year-old Aiden Laos in this road rage shooting has now been increased to $400,000. A fundraiser initially began with a $50,000 reward by the Laos family. Two Orange County supervisors and the district attorney and local businesses later added more money to the reward. It was up to $300,000 on Wednesday, and then it increased to $400,000 as of this past Sunday evening. Orange County District Attorney Todd Spitzer sent out a message Sunday asking the person responsible for Leo's death to come forward and turn himself in. "The longer this goes on," he says, "the less sympathy I'll have. You killed a six-year-old boy, for God's sake. Come forward, turn yourself in." The money is tied to information that leads to the arrest and conviction of the person who fatally shot the six-year-old who was on his way to kindergarten in Yorba Linda. "Aiden's killer will be held accountable for this atrocity," said Orange County Supervisor Don Wagner. "Please come forward if you have any information or know someone who may have information who could crack this case." The one vehicle cut off his mother in the carpool lane of the 55 freeway. The shooter was a man, while the person driving the vehicle was a woman, according to Orange County District Attorney. At the time we covered this, I don't believe they had that detail down. The California Highway Patrol says it was a vehicle, a 2018 to 2019 white Volkswagen Golf sports wagon. Those are not very common, so they should stand out. A white Volkswagen Golf sports wagon with non-tinted windows and a sunroof. It was last seen on the 91 freeway east at McKinley in Riverside. I realize these details don't mean anything to you, Cyrus, but for all people in Southern California, they probably do. Alexis Clunan, the boy's sister, said at a news conference, "I would just like to say thank you on behalf of myself and my mother for all the support. Aiden gets to have a funeral as beautiful as he is, and we're so grateful for this outpouring of love." The CHP is asking you to come forward if you know anything about this. They're looking for anyone who may have dash cam or cell phone video that was taken on the northbound 55 near the 22 and Chapman between 7:15 and 8:15 a.m. last Friday. A GoFundMe page in support of Aiden's mother has also raised more than $322,000. There's another GoFundMe page to support his father. Anyone with information is urged to send tips to the California Highway Patrol Santa Ana office. And the number for that is 714-567-6000. If you know anything, please get in touch. 714-567-6000. And there's that. So that's updated.
Do you have a dash cam on your car?
You know, I thought about doing that. I like dash cam videos. I enjoy watching those.
Yeah, yeah. They're very interesting, and in Russia, people like run out and pretend to be run over and then sue the driver. Now a lot of people in Russia drive around with dash cams to protect themselves. I was like, that's a really great idea, just to have documented, you know, video. It's like, this is what happened. Here's video proof of what happened at this accident or.
Yeah, then you can protect yourself from false claims.
And in this case, if someone had it, you know, we'd have video footage of this car with hopefully a license plate.
I wouldn't be surprised. I know we have to take a break, but Cyrus, I really wouldn't be surprised if some dash cam footage does turn up.
I hope so.
You know, I mean, $400,000, I should think, would make somebody willing to talk, but we'll see.
Yeah,
I hope they catch whoever did this.
If this hoodlum, whoever it was, bragged to any of his friends, I sure hope they turn him in.
Absolutely. Let justice be done. Well, we are overdue for a break. We'll do that. The number to call to be on the program is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Please call now. I'll be right back.
Connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's start with Ted in Torrance, California. Good morning, Ted.
Hello, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes. Last week you discussed Kroger, Ralph's, closing some stores, in Long Beach. I worked at that Long Beach store.
Oh, did you? Now, who may not remember, I'll just pop this in there, that was because I think it was L.A. City Council said that they had to pay $5 an hour more for the employees in these stores, and they declined to do that, so they actually closed the stores. So please continue.
Oh, Patrick. He just dropped on accident.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, maybe he's still listening. I guess the cell phone dropped. So let's see if he'll call back. Call back. The number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. We'll get to his phone call when he calls back. In the meantime, let's go to Peter in Spring City, Pennsylvania. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Patrick. That's a nice meeting you. Good morning. I have a quick question so that I'll spend more time for other people. I have a daughter in college, and this is her. She had one more semester to be done. I bought her a car, and I would condition that she needs to go to the church every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And she only is using that for work if she needs to go. But now she don't have to go drive to work. And she said that she's not sure to believe in God, and she mm-hmm. She don't want me to make her a good Catholic girl.
She doesn't want you to do what as a good Catholic girl?
To be a good Catholic girl.
Okay, so she does not want to be a good Catholic girl. She said.
No, you can. Yes, probably. Yeah, because okay. I keep dragging her. And she said, every time when I see her, I always ask her, that, you know, do you go to church yet? And she gets tired of it.
Yeah. How old is she?
She will be 21 this July.
Does she live with you?
No, she's in leading campus.
Okay. So she's probably fourth year of college. Okay. Now, the other question I have, Peter, is when you purchased the car for your daughter, did you put it in her name, or is it still in your name, but she has the use of it?
No, it's still in my name, my insurance.
Got it.
Everything is mine. So I find out that she's not going to church on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I decide to, I say, okay, now, the purpose that I have a car for you is to go to church and to go to work. Now, none of that happened. So I said, I'll take the car back. Is that duty strict for her? I also said to her, oh, because he had one semester, which means half of the year, we mean at the end of this year, still will be done.
Yeah.
And she had to sign a contract, she had to write a contract for rent for the entire year. And from home to the school is about 45 minutes. So I said, just the last semester, you can just come home, stay home to save money and finish the last semester, because you might have to go to work somewhere else and you still have to pay rent for that because they don't let you just cut off and early. You know, if you leave, you still have to pay to the end.
Right. So am I correct, Peter, that the sticking point here is whether or not you should take the car back from her because she's not going to Mass anymore?
Yes. That's no purpose. You defeat the purpose that I provide a car for you.
Last question I have is, did she agree to that arrangement? In other words, it was a quid pro quo. If you go to Mass on Sunday, I will make sure you have a car. And she agreed to that. Or did she agree to that? Or was that just what you said to her and she never really formally agreed to it?
She is not formally. She just said, kind of like yes, okay. Mm-hmm. But I did not force her because, sometimes, I thought that, it would be easier. I let her make that and then I can decide.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, that's a fascinating scenario, and I could easily understand your frustration if your understanding of the arrangement was that she agreed to go to Mass and you would facilitate that by getting her a car, but now she's saying she doesn't really know if she believes in God, therefore she's not going to Mass. So you're within your rights to say, well, the arrangement was the car so that you could go to Mass. Here's the dangerous part of all this, Peter. And maybe dangerous might not be the right word, but here's the difficulty. Obviously, you would never want to pressure somebody, whether through offering them something, money, a car, a job, if they will be religious. That would be not the right way to go about trying to foster her own faith in God, such as it is. And I can understand that your situation is it's particular because you had this arrangement with her and she understood you, even if she didn't formally agree or sign a paper. She understood that this was the predication for her getting the car. So if you were to take the car back, I don't see in itself that that's anything wrong, especially when you can say, well, the whole point of giving you the car was so that you could get to Mass. But since you're not going to Mass, I mean, there's no point in you having the car for that, or at least no point in my paying for it. But that could cause a ripple effect in your relation. Maybe it will. So this is one of those judgment calls, it seems to me, where on the one hand, it would be wrong, I think, for you to try to prod her to quote-unquote believe in God or go to Mass, and the carrot that you're holding out to her is that she has the use of this car, because then her religious practice is not real. It's not sincere. She's not doing it out of a genuine faith or love for God. She's doing it because she wants a car. And I wouldn't want to put someone in that situation. I wouldn't want to make somebody's gesture or going through the motions of going to Mass to be dependent upon something like that. So I guess that's where you'll have to decide how's the best way to go forward. And would it hinder your relationship with her to go by the book, go by the letter of the law and say, well, that was our agreement. If you're not going to do this, I'm going to take the car back. And you have every right to do that. But I wonder if maybe being a little more magnanimous in this might win her over more. I love you. I want you to be happy. I don't want to enable something that you could do on your own. I don't want to enable it in a bad way, but if I can do something to help you because I love you, I'll be happy to do that. And in a way, you'll be kind of mirroring God's mercy to her and how God works with us where we're at and he doesn't cut us off, and he doesn't, you know, walk away from us. We walk away from him all the time, but he won't walk away from us. So those are some thoughts I would suggest considering, and maybe there's a way through this whereby even if she doesn't say, oh, great, thank you, I guess I do believe in God now, and start going back to church, maybe that's not going to happen. But maybe by maintaining a positive, loving relationship with her over time, you may be able to win her back to her faith in God. Maybe it won't be you, maybe it'll be somebody else, but I could see where this car and withdrawing the car could make the relationship more brittle. It's probably the best word I can think of.
Mm-hmm. I tried to do that so many times, and I said that, you know, I never push her away, and I said I always want her to be home. She denied to go home, and that's why she wanted to move in with her boyfriend this semester, since
This is becoming more complicated. I understand, and as a father, you've got to be wise. You have to be sagacious. So I'll leave you with that thought, Peter. Maybe just ponder to what extent removing the car would make things better. Maybe it wouldn't change anything. But now, this new detail about wanting to live with her boyfriend, that to me would be another reason to say, well, you know, maybe the car is not a great idea right now if you're making some of these bad decisions, and I don't want to unnecessarily aid you in doing things that you know and we know that you shouldn't be doing. And maybe a marriage and family counselor would be a good person to bring into this. I'm not one myself, but hopefully those thoughts are helpful, Peter. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Ted again in Torrance. Hi, Ted. Yes. We got cut off, but welcome back.
Thank you. All the employees were placed in other stores. That's the good news.
Oh, very good. Now, for those who don't know what you're talking about, Ted told me when he called earlier that he was working at, was it the Food for Less or the Ralph's, or which store were you at?
I was at the Ralph's in Long Beach.
Okay. And I was telling the audience last week about how Kroger, which is the parent company for these grocery stores, they declined to pay an extra $5 per hour that was mandated by the local city council, and it resulted ultimately in the closing of the stores. So that's good news. So the people didn't lose their jobs, they just relocated.
Precisely. And then just to add to that, Kroger, at the beginning of the pandemic, made short-term and modest rewards to the employees.
Okay.
So they made efforts, but I believe that there was government overreach because we have a contract, a labor contract. So in a sense, the city violated the contract by forcing the company to pay us more wages than was agreed to in the original contract.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And look at the reverse side of the coin. Imagine if a city said, hey, we want this supermarket to stay here and they're not doing well. So we give you permission to give the employees reduced wages.
Yeah. That wouldn't go over so well, would it?
No. And to add one last note, for years they had been rumors that our store was closing due to its poor performance.
Mm-hmm.
So wanted to give you all the facts.
Yeah, it didn't shock anybody when this happened, I guess.
No.
Now, let me ask you this, because the follow-up to that story a day or two later was I brought up how Kroger was incentivizing people to get the vaccine by giving out millions of dollars. And I looked back on it later, and I was kind of rethinking my position on the story originally. And I thought, well, wouldn't it have been better if Kroger had maybe just taken one of those millions, because I think there were five $1 million prizes, maybe just take one of those and then distribute that by way of a $5 raise to all the people that were affected. It would more than cover that. And that's sort of where I left the story. So this is a good add-on.
Yeah, good point. Much appreciate you bringing this to light. And that's the value I wanted to add to. So thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Ted. I'm glad you did. And I'm glad you called back. Cell signals can be tricky. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Mary in New Berlin, Wisconsin. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Patrick. I had a question. My son was assigned an article about an event that had caused hysteria. And the one that he was requested to read was the one about the visions of the Blessed Virgin Mary, who appeared on top of the Coptic church in Zaytun.
In
I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Yes, okay. In Egypt. Mm-hmm. And it stated, I read the article as well, he shared it with me, and it stated that it was seen by hundreds of thousands of people between the years 1968 and 1971. Mm-hmm. And I just have two questions on that, mm-hmm. which I'll ask, and then I can hang up and allow you to answer them. The first one is, I was just wondering why the Catholic Church has not recognized that as a legitimate vision. And the second one is, if you could just help me understand the difference between Catholicism and the Coptic Church, because honestly, I wasn't even familiar with that. So okay. I'll hang up, and then that'll allow you to answer it. So thank you very much.
You're welcome, Mary. Thank you. Yeah, I became aware of this apparition, and I believe it is a genuine apparition. I've seen the video. I've seen the still pictures for years and years. I think I first became aware of it in the early 70s when I was in high school. And I think the answer to your question is, why has the Catholic Church not done this? Is because this was a Coptic Orthodox church. It was the cathedral, if I'm not mistaken. And it was in Egypt. So the jurisdiction fell to the Pope of the Coptic Orthodox Church. And he actually approved it. So, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs, and this is something I haven't done any serious study on. But I know that the Catholic Church is aware of it. I'm sure that the Pope at the time, Pope Paul VI, was aware of it. And whether or not there was any statement by the Catholic Church, I'm not aware of any. I think we would have heard about it if we had. But everything that I can see about this suggests to me that this is legitimate. I don't know how else to account for it. But it was seen by not only Coptic Orthodox people, but by many Muslims who had no interest in seeing this be genuine. And yet they, too, testified to what they saw. And the pictures are striking. The image of Our Lady, or kind of a profile of her standing on the top by the dome of this beautiful cathedral, and the light that shimmered not only around her, but all around the entire top of the dome and the sides of the building. It's very striking, no question about it. Now, you asked about what are the differences between the Coptic Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church. Well, primarily, the Coptic Orthodox Church is of ancient origin. It goes back to, well, in a sense, it goes back to St. Mark, who is understood to be the apostolic personage who evangelized in that area. And there were early church heresies that were problematic, and not all of them were completely resolved. And that would include, for example, the Monophysite heresy. Now, the Monophysite heresy was one of the various Christian or Christological heresies in the early church. And some of these churches sort of fell into some of these heresies. I mean, I shouldn't say sort of. I mean, they were deemed to have fallen into some of these heresies. And so a separation occurred that in some cases remains to this day. Now, what's interesting is that the Coptic Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church have very good relations. And so it would not surprise me if in due time we find our way back together again. And that might require a kind of revision of the creed on their part, or coming to an understanding about, the nature of Jesus Christ. You know, what is the nature of Christ? Does he have one will or two wills? Does he have one nature or two natures? These are the kinds of things that were common to the Christological heresies of the early church. So when it comes to something like Monophysitism, what does that mean for the average believer in the Coptic Orthodox Church now? And how does the Catholic understand the way in which the Coptic Orthodox Church believes? I think there's room for us to be able to sort this thing out. Thankfully, we've got a great deal of the work already done for us by the early church, the early councils that condemned Monophysitism, that condemned Nestorianism and the various other Christological heresies. So those are my thoughts on the matter. Fascinating. And anybody who's interested in seeing the pictures of the apparition at Zaytun, just go to the YouTubes or go to the go to Google, and you'll be able to find it there. It's Z E I T O U N is how it's spelled, and I think you'll find that the pictures are quite dramatic. Another break, and then we'll come back to more phone calls. The number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
We've been waiting for a long time.
Compelling insights.
Yes, we've been waiting for a long, long time.
Unpredictable conversations.
We've been waiting for a long time.
Encouragement for your day.
We ain't gonna wait no more. We're getting ready to rock and roll.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Why didn't these guys go on to superstar fame, Cyrus, with that voice and that sound?
They're so talented. What a great song.
It's the Bus Boys.
Yep. Totally. I mean, from what I, in my circles, nobody knows this band.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of came and went on MTV in the early days of MTV, and then you just never heard about them. I don't know what happened. Maybe they all went into other bands, but, you know, when you told me during the break that you were going to play that song, I thought you meant the Thin Lizzy version of it, the one that came out in the 70s.
Do you want to sing it for us? I can't think of how that goes.
Well, it's the same song, but it's the Thin Lizzy version.
Oh, it's the exact same song.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing.
Well, you can't tell me that you haven't heard that song.
I don't know it.
Well, as soon as you hear it, you'll recognize it.
Okay, it'll be one of those.
I'm feeling like maybe a little bit of Wake Up Maggie. It would be in order today.
Didn't we just do that
Tuesday
on
morning,
Friday?
First day of the week?
All right.
Good morning, Tuesday morning.
Good morning.
Feels
like Monday.
I like this story. It does feel like Monday. I like this story. L.A. couple gives back to parents by putting cash in baby products. A local couple is spreading kindness to strangers. This is by FoxLA.com, by the way. Spreading kindness to strangers by giving away $1,000 as a surprise to people who are buying baby products. All the people with baby, Cyrus, they're all perking up right now. Crystal and Patrick Dehaney of Cerritos are parents of two, and they're expecting their third baby. They were at a Manhattan Beach Target store recently and noticed the prices for baby products are even higher than what they remembered, so they decided to give back on a whim. Patrick said, "We just wanted to do our part trying to help people, especially because we've been so blessed." The couple has been spending their days going from Target to Target, hiding money in baby items. They created a video of their discreet giveaway journey that took them to Targets in Manhattan Beach, Carson, and Signal Hill. The video is now going viral online. In all, they doled out about $1,000. They say because they know what it's like to struggle, they wanted to pay it forward, especially during the pandemic. Crystal is a registered nurse and a successful business owner who built her company from the ground up. The couple is just now trying to figure out when their next Target will be. Her company, by the way, is Milky Mama. It's a breastfeeding-related company. No clue. excuse me. So that's happening. Now, this is not fun and games. This next story, there are actually two stories that are intertwined. First of all, American Airlines and Southwest Airlines have put off plans to serve alcohol because of passenger disruptions. And it's way up. It's a spike. And I have a theory. I'll tell you what my theory is in a minute. But I have a theory as to why we're seeing this. So according to CNBC, Southwest and American are holding off on resuming alcoholic beverage services after a flight attendant was assaulted and the industry grapples with a surge of other passenger incidents on board. Cyrus, did you see that video of the flight attendant trying to calm that woman in the back of the plane and she got punched in the face?
Is this the woman who lost teeth?
I think it was her, yeah. And then a big guy, he basically stood up and imposingly towered over this passenger and told her to shut up and sit down. But that was only after she had punched the flight attendant in the face and drew blood.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I wonder if this guy's standing up. I wonder if he's going to get in trouble.
He better not.
Right. He shouldn't, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was, you know, he was big. He looked like he was every bit of 6'5". So there was nothing she could do against that. But, you know, in a way, he was like the voice of authority. Mm-hmm. The flight attendant should have been the voice of authority. And I'm not faulting her. I'm just saying, for whatever reason, the female passenger, she didn't accept that. And she wound up punching her. But this guy, he just imposed law and order, I guess you'd say.
Was alcohol involved in this?
I don't know. I don't want to say that it was. I don't know. But that incident is akin to many others. So listen to this. Let's see. Airlines have been slowly bringing back some meal, snack, and beverage service that they had paused early in the pandemic. American says it won't sell alcoholic beverages in the main cabin until September 13th, when the federal mask mandate is set to expire. I mean, by the way, I'll bet you that even after September 13th, there will still be a slice of humanity who will continue to doggedly wear their masks. They will not give those masks up.
In the main, can we go back a sentence?
Yeah.
Alcohol will not be served in the main cabin?
Main cabin.
What does that mean?
It means the beautiful people up front in first class, they still get alcohol. But the hoi polloi, which is most all of us, is in the back. And if you were to smuggle something on board and had to have a little tipple, you know, you bring one of the little tiny bottles of gin or something, you can get in big trouble for that.
I saw firsthand. The people...
When you tried it?
Yeah, I can't. I'm not allowed on United anymore. No, we actually did see the people right across from us. They had a little party going? A briefcase, and he opened it up and it was full of liquor. And the stewardess walked by and she's like, "Oh, you cannot have that. It's a federal offense. You'll be arrested." And then mm-hmm. they went on the intercom and then they announced the same rules to everyone. And that was the only plane that I saw that on. So it's almost like they're announcing.
You told your friend to put the briefcase away,
I said,
right?
Put it away. Just be more discreet.
So that means, well, I mean, that does tie into this. So no alcohol in the main cabin until September 13th. Over the past week, we've seen some of these stressors create deeply disturbing situations on board aircraft. Brady Burns, managing editor of the flight service at American, said in a note to flight attendants. He said, "Let me be clear. American Airlines will not tolerate assault or mistreatment of our crews." And they're exactly right to do so. I back them to the hilt on this issue. They've got to teach people that they can't do this kind of stuff. Southwest had planned to resume alcohol sales in June for its Hawaii flights and in July for longer domestic flights in the continental USA. A Southwest spokesman said there is currently no timetable for alcohol sales to resume. Montgomery, who is with American Airlines? She's the flight attendant union president, Lynn Montgomery. She said in a letter to CEO Gary Kelly, she said, as alcohol sales are added back into this already volatile environment, you can surely understand our concern. Last Monday, a day after the incident on board the Sacramento to San Diego flight, the FAA said it received approximately 2,500 reports of unruly passengers just this year. Approximately 1,900 of those cases involved travelers who refused to follow the federal mask mandate during air travel. The Biden administration still requires that people wear face masks on planes, at the airport, and on buses and trains through September 13th, although the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has loosened guidelines for people who have been vaccinated. Burns said, "We recognize that alcohol can contribute to atypical behavior from customers on board, and we owe it to our crew not to potentially exacerbate what can already be a new and stressful situation for our customers." Okay, so there's that part of the story. The flight attendants the union has provided some more detail. So here's one that comes from the president of the Association of Flight Attendants, Sarah Nelson. She said, "This is an environment that we just haven't seen before, and we can't wait for it to be over. The behavior has become completely nuts," says one of the people quoted here, whose union represents about 50,000 cabin crew members across more than a dozen carriers. "It's a constant combative attitude. It's got to stop." Her comments follow a recent violent confrontation that resulted in a Southwest Airlines flight attendant sustaining facial injuries, and losing two teeth. The Southwest Airlines said the passenger repeatedly ignored standard flight instructions and became verbally and physically abusive upon landing. The 28-year-old woman had been charged with a felony And this is the crime of battery in this incident, which occurred on a Sacramento to San Diego flight. The Federal Aviation Administration said on Monday that it has received 2,500 reports just since January the 1st, roughly three-quarters of which involved failure to adhere to these guidelines, more than 20 times higher than what is normally recorded in an entire year, according to CNBC. One flight attendant quoted said she noted that the role masks are playing in the surge is big and expressed disappointment that health protocols on planes are seen as a political issue. The federal mask mandate. Yeah, there's the music. All right. Well, when we return, I think you have enough of the details here. A lot of crazy things going on, unruly people on airlines. And when we return, I'm going to share with you my theory as to why this is happening. I've been thinking about this a lot because I fly a lot. And I have a theory about why this is happening. I'll share it with you when we come back from this quick timeout. Please stay right there.
What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.